A.J. Jacobs is one of my favorite journalists and authors. He does a kind of immersive writing where when he tackles a topic, he doesn't just explore it, he lives it. So he carried around a set of encyclopedias for a year, read every page of them, and then talked about what he learned. He lived a year biblically. He looked into his family tree and health, and now he's written about puzzling. His latest book is The Puzzler, One Man's Quest to Solve the Most Baffling Puzzles Ever. AJ, welcome back to WGN Radio.
Thank you, John. It is always one of my favorite people to talk to, so thanks for having me back.
I've heard you do other interviews, and you say that to everybody, but I'll still take it.
That is a lie. That is a lie. I'm going to send you the links.
Actually, you and I did talk a lot before. What was the book you wrote about the Encyclopedia Britannica? What was the title of that book?
That's right. Yeah, that was called The Know-It-All,
All
about the weird facts I learned from reading everything and that I've forgotten 99.9% of.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that, because as you would check in with us during the course of that year and tell us about the journey, and it was fascinating. And the way I relate that book to other people is, you know how when, say, you're looking at a pepper shaker and somebody else is peppering their food, and you know the most incredible anecdote about pepper shakers, and you can't resist telling them because you can't believe what I know about pepper shakers. That was you for a year, wasn't it?
I could not stop, and it got so bad that my wife started to fine me. She penalized me $1 for every irrelevant fact I inserted into conversation. There was just too much. And listen, I might have forgotten almost all of it, but 0.1% of the encyclopedia,
still
a lot better than I was.
And then when you did the Year of Living Biblically, boy, your poor wife then. I mean, you went through all sorts of trials and tribulations.
Oh, yeah, no, she was not happy about that. First of all, I had to grow a beard because the Bible says you cannot shave the corners of your beard. I didn't know where the corners were, so I just let the whole thing grow. And she was completely grossed out and wouldn't kiss me for 7 months. And that was just the tip of the iceberg.
Yeah, no kidding. Which of these journeys that you've taken your family through was the most difficult?
I think it was the Year of Living Biblically because it changed the way I looked. It changed the way that I talked. I couldn't gossip, so my wife was annoyed about that. Couldn't watch R-rated movies. So it was, that was a nightmare for her. Some of them have been okay. Like when I thanked 1,000 people for my cup of coffee, I became a little more of a grateful person. So that one wasn't bad for her.
That was Thanks a Lot. Was that the title of that? Thanks a million.
Thanks a thousand.
Thanks a thousand.
I didn't get to a million. Did not get to a million, but I could have.
But just tell us the premise for that book.
Well, the idea was I wanted to be more grateful, so I thanked 1,000 people who had any, even the smallest role in my morning cup of coffee. So I thanked the barista at my local coffee shop. I went to the South America and thanked the farmer. But I thanked the truck driver who drove the coffee beans. The people who made the street, because he couldn't have driven his truck without the street. And, you know, it just went on from there.
All of relative to that one cup of coffee, you found 1,000 people connected with it. What was the most rewarding appreciation that you got? What was the most rewarding reaction you got?
Well, it varies. There were some people who I would cold call or go visit, and they try to thank them, and they'd be like, "Is this a pyramid scheme? What are you trying to do?"
Yeah.
But 90% of the people were super happy to be thanked because we take them for granted. So there was one woman I remember I called up. She provided pest control for the warehouse where the coffee beans were stored. And I said, "I know this is kind of weird, but I just want to thank you for keeping the bugs out of my coffee." And she said, "Well, yeah, that is a little weird, but thank you. I just get no appreciation in my job, and this made my day," which in turn made my day. So it was a nice little virtual cycle. It was sort of like an anti-crank phone call, like a positive crank phone call.
Yeah, I think it was a prank phone call or a crank phone call. It was a special kind of phone call, but it was the rare good version of that. I'll absolutely give you that. And now this latest book about puzzles. Let me pause, come back, and at least your family got to do this. This sounded like this must have been their favorite book, right? This must have been the most fun for your family.
This one they actually liked. It was quite a nice change.
Okay, so let's tell the story. This is A.J. Jacobs, the best-selling author of now The Puzzler, One Man's Quest to Solve the Most Baffling Puzzles Ever. Of particular interest to me in this book is the fact that he did the Monty Hall problem, and he explained it in a way that I've never heard anybody else explain. It is the most vexing problem in the world, and yet A.J. was able to sort of put just a fine enough point on it that you get it, and it works. Hooray for that. Author A.J. Jacobs' latest book is The Puzzler, One Man's Quest to Solve the Most Baffling Puzzles Ever. It's a journey you went on, if this is the truth, A.J., because your name appeared in the New York Times crossword puzzle. Is that right?
Right. That's how the book opens. I've always loved puzzles, but a few years ago, I was the answer to one down in the New York Times crossword puzzle, and I thought, as a word nerd, this is the greatest moment of my life. This is like the Holy Grail. But then I got an email from my brother-in-law, who did congratulate me, but he pointed out that I was in Saturday's New York Times crossword puzzle. And if you know the New York Times, they get harder throughout the week. So Saturday's is the hardest of the week, and all the answers are totally obscure. No one's supposed to know them. So his point was, this is not a compliment. This is proof that no one knows who the hell you are. So then I was devastated. But luckily, I told that story on a podcast, and one of the other crossword makers heard it and saved me and put me in a Tuesday puzzle, which is not Monday, but it's still a place where, you know, real famous people appear. I did not belong there, but I was happy to be given the opportunity.
I thought the Sunday Times was the hardest. It's Saturday, huh?
Saturday is harder than Sunday. Sunday is bigger, so it takes longer. But Sunday is about the equivalent difficulty of a Thursday.
One of the things that you pointed out, so then you explore the history of crosswords and the hardest crossword puzzle and the biggest crossword puzzle, et cetera. Then you do jigsaw puzzles and you talk about Rubik's Cube and Sudoku. About all of that, two things surprise me: how recent Sudoku is and how recent crossword puzzles are. You think those would go back as long as numbers and language, but they don't, do they?
No, crosswords started in 1913 in the New York World. And what I love about crosswords is they became a craze and were printed in every newspaper except the New York Times, which refused to print them until 1942. And in fact, I searched the archives. They ran tons of articles about what a menace to society crosswords are, how they were wives were murdering husbands, literally, because of crosswords, and prisoners, riots because of crosswords. So it was just hilarious to read all of this panic, this moral panic about crosswords, of all things. And yes, Sudoku was only invented, I believe, in the early 80s, and then took off a few years later.
And the guy that invented Sudoku, he didn't call it Sudoku, he called it like number place or something like that, right?
Right. It was in an American magazine, a Dell magazine, so it is an American origin. But I think, yeah, he made a huge mistake. He called it number place, the most boring title you can think of. So this Japanese publisher took it over and changed the name to Sudoku, which is actually a pun in Japanese. It means bachelor number, single number. So, if you're Japanese, that's very funny. But
I'll laugh later. I'm kind of busy right now. But, you know,
exactly.
And I would say the most interesting fad or phase, I mean, because you do talk about how wildly popular these games became at times, jigsaw puzzles as well, Rubik's Cube. I guess your book was written or going to get published before Wordle came along?
Oh, yeah. Well, this was a crazy coincidence, because in one sense, the book had great timing because it came out right during the quarantine, and jigsaw puzzles were like everywhere, especially early in the pandemic. But Wordle, we closed the book, and then 2 weeks later, Wordle exploded. Everything was Wordle. And I was like, oh, my God. So I called my editor and begged her, we have to open the book up just to get Wordle in there. So now Wordle is mentioned in one sentence. It says, at night I do the crossword and Wordle. So if people like you ask me, was Wordle covered? I can say, absolutely. Absolutely. We got it.
Not a whole chapter, but you at least made it to press.
Yeah. The word Wordle is in there.
Your family participated in an international jigsaw puzzle competition representing the United States.
Yeah, that was hilarious and unexpected because I am actually not a great jigsaw puzzler. It's not my favorite, or it wasn't. But when I was Googling, I ran across the International Jigsaw Puzzle Championships, and there were 40 countries signed up, but no USA. So on a whim, I just signed up. And I get an email the next day, okay, you're our Team USA, come to Spain in 1 month and participate. And we went there and we got our butts whomped. We came in, we didn't come in last, we came in seconds last. So I'm very proud of that. But we had a great time and it was fascinating to see. You had 8 hours to solve 4 puzzles with a team of 4, so I brought my wife and kids, and it was one of my favorite family trips ever, despite the humiliation.
One thing that your book reminds us of is that there are communities for almost anything out there, and people are passionate about it. Like we do jigsaw puzzles at my house during the holidays. We put up a table and everybody, and it's a wonderful thing. I can't imagine traveling to Spain to be in an international competition about it, but. But I mean, and that's not about you, but about the other people that were there. It was their thing. It's, I don't know, just put a point to what we learn from puzzles or the value of them besides a nice distraction.
Oh, well, yeah, I think there are tons of values. But to talk about the one you brought up, well, it really is, it brings people together. Puzzles are very communal. And like you say, the family doing the jigsaw, but these communities form. And I saw Josh Wordle speak at the crossword convention a few months ago. He's the one who invented Wordle. And he told a lovely story about a man, it was a gay man who was estranged from his family, his conservative family. And they didn't talk, but then Wordle came along and they had something to talk about. So it brought the family together. It's a step in the right direction.
Oh, yeah.
They haven't. Love that.
You make the point in the book that somebody studied conservatives and liberals and they can't work together or agree on things. Certainly politically, there's this great divide. But then when you put those same people and say, do a puzzle together, they bond, they work together, they're effective. And if so the skills are there, we just got to get past some of our biases.
Right. I know. I mean, maybe we should have the Senate do a big jigsaw puzzle. But actually, in all seriousness, I advocate what I call the puzzler mindset, which is to see problems as a puzzle. And so if you're in an argument with someone from the other side of the spectrum, then don't see it as a battle. Try seeing it as a puzzle. What do you really disagree about? What right. evidence can you present? Can they present? Where can we go from here? Then it's more of a collaborative exercise and more likely to produce something real and helpful.
What's the piece that I can put in here that will connect us? I love that metaphor, and I like the idea of on the Senate floor. They're mostly just standing around, you know, with their hands in their pockets. They never look real busy on the Senate, but if they had a tall table with a 1,000-piece puzzle there of an eagle, and there's Mitch McConnell going, hey, Joe Manchin, looks like you got the border pressure. I mean, that would be a beautiful thing.
And I love the idea of an eagle or an American flag.
They would fight over, they would fight over that. That would be the distraction.
You're right. Thing. You're right. Eagle is a better idea.
AJ Jacobs, so what's the next thing you're going to run your family through now, AJ? What are you working on next?
Well, not to be too on those, but it's a puzzle. I don't have an idea yet for my next book. So if anyone listening has an idea, please email me. I love interacting with people.
I have.
Or Don, if you have an idea.
No, I don't have any ideas. I got 60 seconds left. Can you explain to us in 48 seconds now the Monty Hall problem? Go.
Okay. I'll get about one-tenth of the way. Yeah, you're on a game show. You're given a choice of three doors. Behind one door is a car. Two doors have goats. You pick a door. Monty Hall opens another door. It's a goat. And he says, now do you want to switch your choices? What should you do? You should say yes.
Switch choices.
You should switch. Yes.
And that seems so counterintuitive. And then you explain that, and I don't have time, and maybe I don't even think we should do it on the radio anyway, but you explain why, now given just two doors left, one with a goat, one with a car, you should in fact not take your original pick, take the other door. And right. It makes sense the way you explain it. So thank you for that.
Thank you for saying, my pleasure. Yeah, so crazy and counterintuitive. I love that puzzle.
The book is called The Puzzler, One Man's Quest to Solve the Most Baffling Puzzles Ever, Crosswords, Jigsaws, and the Meaning of Life. Thank you, AJ. My best to your family.
Thank you, John. So fun to talk, and I'll talk to you soon.
The book's doing pretty well, too.